We are back for episode 298. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Some good news for a change out of South Africa. South Africa beats climate goals as blackouts slash emissions. Unintentional power plant breakdowns are reducing industrial activity. Therefore, they're getting to their net zero goal. So basically, yeah. The collapse of South African civilization is helping them meet their very stringent emission standards that they're ahead of the schedule. So that's all it takes is just collapse of modern civilization and you meet your emission standards. So hooray for South Africa.
Well, I mean, just watch the TV show Naked and Afraid and you can see net zero in action. You know, I mean, it's just part of the deindustrialization of the world to create a post-electricity class of people who will be transgender sex slaves. I mean, is there any confusion about where all this goes? Or that the people who are trying to talk about, you know, climate change, which of course is the new expression because global warming, you know, was a face plant. And so they had to move away from that scientifically perfect explanation of weather to one that's just totally different. But, you know, so they're just, you know, with the net zero thing, I mean, what can you say? I mean, it's a poor world. It's a world that's almost incapable of resistance to the oligarchs, right? And that's what they're trying to do with it. There's a lot of people that are fighting against it. And we'll see how this plays out, but it's just a very clear, malevolent agenda. That's all I can say.
Yeah, interesting. Finland actually brought online a new nuclear power plant, and the energy bills dropped 73%.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. They have so under pressure there that they had to back down and scrap this idea of getting rid of nuclear power. Contrast that to Germany, of course, which is their energy costs are skyrocketing and the economy is collapsing, and so. That's the choice you have. So, but Germany, I guess, is on schedule for their emission goals. Of course, this is all a fake thing because there really isn't an emission issue. It's a fake issue. CO2 is not a problem. It's, it's not creating, nor is man's contribution to it. It's 0.005% of the atmosphere or something.
It's the whole thing is ludicrous. You know, do you remember the ozone hole?
Yeah. Yeah. Acid rain, yeah.
Can you remember that? So, you know, the ozone hole, global warming, and the oceans rising. And so we were sunk, and then, you know, all of those things were just, you know, bogus. But the political force that was trying to, you know, propel them, into changing our society, it never went away. And it just kept changing its definition of what the bad thing was. And they would change the terms and expressions. And now they finally settled on climate change, which I think is a pretty low bar, if you know what I mean. It's like, there's gonna be changing in the weather, there's no question. And now it's just this ludicrous situation where when it's hot, it shows that climate change is occurring. And then when it's wet, it's climate change. And everything is climate change. And yet the world's climatic structure has basically chaos at its core, at least in the sense that no one can really predict it or know.
No, because you're actually dealing with cosmic forces because you have the modern minimum.
Solar, wind, and things like that.
Volcanic activity, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just the whole thing is ridiculous. And it's just a smiley face to create the idea that giving up your, kind of electric world and a world where you have the autonomy to drive a car, things like this, that you're sacrificing nobly. I mean, Klaus Schwab, right? You're going to own nothing, but you'll be completely happy. And you'll be happy because we tell you to. And if you complain, we'll give you fentanyl.
The same forces are the ones that nurtured the consumer economy, throwaway society, planned obsolescence and these things. And but now they turn around and want to take it all away and pose as ones with the solutions, one of the ones that created the problem in the first place, to the extent that there is a problem. I mean, I think that like the problem, the polluting the oceans, I think 90% of it comes from Africa and Asia, not the United States. Of course, none of the emission standards or environmental standards are will be imposed, you know, on Asia and China. Like a good example is they're building coal plants in China, like one a week or something. And so all the emission standards that are being used to steal farms, like in the Netherlands, or shut down industrial capacity in Germany, or to overregulate and just hamper the U.S. economy. It's an attempt to create a false scarcity, austerity under the guise of saving the planet, you know.
Yeah, the plastic in Africa is not really in general produced there. There are some, a lot of it's just imported. Mm-hmm. But the culture of no concern, you know, for just putting the plastic into rivers and things, which mm-hmm. ends up in the ocean, is pretty endemic throughout Africa. Mm-hmm. If you've traveled there at all, you see it everywhere. You know, there's just plastic. They don't really pick it up. One place, I haven't been there in a while because when I was there, it was just so terrifying. But one place that's just dramatic is Jamaica, which is, I don't know, 95% black, I believe, something like that. And you would come to this beautiful river, and at the bend, there would be so much plastic floating you could walk mm-hmm. across. And the public, the population, just didn't have the sense of, that this was an abomination that they had to do something about. So this ends up in the ocean, and then the oligarchs point the finger at Europeans and say, well, you're consuming too much and this is polluting the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's ridiculous, but bear in mind this technology, the plastic that they use is really not, it's not necessary. There's other technologies that use things which can decompose very easily, which you can create these. I mean, for example, like paper bags is one. There's a genius piece of technology, mm-hmm. but I knew, there was a company, Urshell, that came up with all kinds of hundreds of different ways to get rid of plastics.
No, hemp. Hemp is a great product, actually.
Yeah, for sure. Example, you know,
so they can make spoons and forks. Yeah. And it actually feels nicer when you put it in your mouth. It just doesn't irritate. You know, have you ever had a plastic fork where you're eating kind of just rubs? Yeah. This actually was texture was nice, and it's hemp. And of course, that goes back to the 1930s and the creation of plastics. You know, obviously the petrochemical industry derived from the Rockefeller, you know, the whole oil conglomerates, and they're the ones that made everything petroleum based, even gasoline as opposed to ethyl fuel. That was a scam pulled off in the 20s and 30s with prohibition.
That's right. Yep.
You know, and then but then we're stuck with what we have, and then you know after 75, 80 years, people just get used to it. They consume, and of course the whole effect of consumer economy driven by credit and the idea of new and improved products every couple of years, that's a throwaway society. So it's it's difficult for people to assess these things because they inherit them and they get used to it. They think just the way it is. You know, same thing with factory farming and high density agriculture. These things are where the manipulation of capital and credit and consolidation creates a very unhealthy food system. A good example is centralizing food production. Smithfield's Food is owned by a Chinese concern, you know, and have these huge pig farms, you know, which John Rappaport talks about, which was the basis for the original swine flu scare back in 2009. It was toxicity. It wasn't a virus, but they blame a virus to avoid the problem of the toxicity because of all the pollution, these huge industrial farming, you know, pig farms create. It's concentrated. It's not natural, and you pay for it later on because they produce food that isn't healthy. It's it's full of antibiotics, and then it's
Look at DDT.
Yeah,
there's a Monsanto product.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and then look at the parallel between the usage of DDT and the so-called victims of polio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible how the overlay, when the DDT use went up, this phenomena suddenly occurred. And then when it went down, it disappeared. You know, they then cited the vaccine as
blame the virus. Yes.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. So, you know, we don't, you know, as a population, we don't suspect malice on the part of our government. You know, this is the big problem, is that we believe what they tell us in general and think mm-hmm. they have our interests at heart, when in fact they are, you know, shaping the world in the way they want. And in that world, we don't have a place.
Yep. This month is a Jewish American Heritage Month.
Yeah. Yeah. I caught that.
So the White House sent out a proclamation. The Jewish American story and the story of our nation as a whole is fueled by faith, resilience, and hope. And they cited the Jewish contribution to American society. Mm. And particularly this administration, right?
yeah, particularly in the terms of policing the population. Yeah, it's amazing.
So I want to, if you're happy with how the economy is performing, thank a Jew, Janet Yellen, head of the Treasury. If you want to thank the Justice Department for its blind pursuit of fair and equal justice, thank the Jew Merrick Garland. If you want to thank the role the U.S. United States is playing in seeing that peace prevails and prosperity prevails throughout the world and avoiding war, thank Anthony Blinken, the Jew at the State Department. If you want to, you know, so it's almost endless. Thank
if you're happy with the Ukrainian war, you've got Victoria
Nuland. Ukraine. Sure. Victoria Nuland, Anthony Blinken. And
if you like the defunding and unincarceration approach to police department, you can thank George Soros.
Yes.
You know?
And if you like the state of American culture, they've taken credit with Hollywood. You know, just give a thank you to Hollywood, and also the fact that the country is now drenched in pornography. Many Jews have claimed credit for essentially legitimizing, legalizing pornography, making it a First Amendment issue. If you want to thank the fact you don't have that you're protected from hate speech, i.e., opinions you may not immediately agree with, well, thank the ADL because they impose hate speech codes on everybody now. They censor everybody. So thank you. So it's
we have a lot to be grateful for, Tim.
If you want to thank you know, the fact the United States has secured our borders, protected the country from being overrun by by foreigners, thank you know, Alejandro Mayorkas.
Just in that regard, you know, we
DHS.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, you know, and I mentioned the idea that the Roosevelt Hotel, you know, was mm-hmm. they were going to have 1,000 rooms. And I just I got a lot of feedback on that. And I just want to point out my agreement with the people who commented on that phenomenon to me. The real problem here is that no one knows what these people are like, right? There's mm-hmm. no vetting process. They just come across the border. All we know about them is they are the losers from countries that are very poor, infested with crime and drug use and drug, you know, mm-hmm. cartels. So this is what we know about them. And then to bring them here, insert them, and have no programs or control over them, I mean, no one can think that this is going to go anywhere other than disaster. And no one should think that that's anything other than that was in back of all this, right? Mm-hmm. So when you think about, you know, the people who are, you know, responsible for bringing them across the border and then shuttling them around, well, what can you say, Tim, other than these are basically combatants against the heritage American community, and they've taken over the government.
Yeah, if you like the fact that America's gone from over 90% ethnic white country to only about 60%, and it's declining by the day because of mass migration. Well, let's thank the Jewish participation in that effort. Barbara Spector in Europe, and of course, here, they've been advocates of mass migration. They're the ones that advocated for the for the Hart-Celler Act 1965 that led to the drastic demographic changes that have occurred in the past 55 years. Just thank them.
We also, I don't know if we want to switch gears, but I really would like to thank the Jewish comedian, the Jewess comedian, Glazer name. She was
the Miller Lite ad. Yes, the feminist Miller Lite ad. Elena Glazer. She's supposedly a comedian, allegedly.
She's funny. Now, yeah. Anyone who hasn't seen that really needs to watch it. I hope it's on YouTube. I would imagine it is.
They pulled it. It ran in March. I didn't know about it. March is Women's History Month. Yeah. And I'm a little confused because in February is Black History Month, and I learned that blacks invented everything in February. Then in March, I hear that women invented beer. So I'm a
black didn't get around to inventing that.
Maybe a black woman did. I don't know.
But anyway, like that you sent me the ad, and yes. I'm pretty cynical. I was slack jawed in amazement. That was the most insane kind of attempt. Well, at obvious propaganda.
Yes.
Even to present itself as an advertisement, just to set the scene for the listeners, this really hectoring, and I would say it's a pretty reasonable characterization to call her homely, wouldn't you? I mean, she's not.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call.
That would be up to judgment. But I mean, certainly, I mean, not an attractive woman.
Not to say she's not. Wouldn't strike me as it wouldn't. She wouldn't stick out as being unattractive, average. Yeah, but wouldn't call her attractive.
But she has a kind of aggressive, hostile air.
Yes.
And she's there to lecture, beer drinkers about the failure to recognize that beer was an invention of women.
Apparently because some participated in the process.
She has a really kind of nasty attitude, hectoring, I would call it.
Well, Joe, come on, she's Jewish.
Okay.
And is Jewish. I want to thank, again, back to that, yeah. We're Jewish American history. I want to thank the Jews for creating this Miller Lite ad, another contribution to American culture. So
the thing is this is where
she looks really Jewish, right? We know what that means. Yeah. Right?
Very, very aggressive kind of individual, yeah. But she comes up, she tells, people don't understand that women invented beer. It's our invention. Every Mesopotamia, she's talking about the forests of the Mayan civilization. It's women. Women invented it. Anyway,
yeah, but let me ask you a question, Jerry. Were these women in Sumeria, were they wearing bikinis?
Well, they must have been, because then she goes, and what have they done to us? What has men done to us, even though we invented the beer? She comes to a poster of a very attractive woman who's wearing a bikini.
Yes. For some reason, the face is blotted out, right?
Yeah, kind of. But anyways, an attractive woman. I mean, you can see that she's physically in really good shape and just beautiful, in a bikini. And she, the Jewish comedian says, this is what they've done. This is what men have done. And then
they put us in bikinis.
They put us in bikinis, right.
Well, not you.
Right. My point is that, sorry to be
wrong. Who's they, by the way?
Yeah, white males. But the point is that, the idea that this commercial no one would ever have a beer with this woman. I mean, no one would. There's not one person in the world that would actually sit down and want to have a beer with this individual. She's too hostile, she's too aggressive, and she's completely opposed to physical beauty. So, and fantasies about it. So this cannot be an attempt at marketing beer. It's just not possible. So what they've done is, it's pretty clear cut, they've transitioned, right, from actual marketing with the, kind of twist of propaganda inside it to just out and out propaganda.
Yeah, they're more interested in rather selling product to people.
Yeah, they're not trying
responding to demand. They're more interested in social engineering and advocacy.
That's the thing is that that's
ESG.
Why,
it's ESG. Yes.
Yeah, that's why the ad is very, I think, very useful to look at.
But it's also vulgar, right?
100%.
It's something that I know. So a lot of female stand-up comedians. Obviously, women can be very, very funny writers, and there are plenty of them. But stand-up comedians, they always come across as either being, they compensate, and they end up being usually very bitter and vulgar, and they think that's funny. And they also, one thing that I've noticed with male comedians will pick on men as much as they do as women, usually. Whereas women tend to, it's something that they can't laugh at themselves as much. And they just come across as bitter and vulgar. They use, you know, they say shit, you know, shit, you know, like, okay, funny, you're being vulgar. Okay, whatever.
The new trend in female comedians, and it's very strong. You know, if you watch TikTok or, you know, the feeds that occur on Facebook, which I will admit I do, but not because I find them, you know, kind of entertaining, just because, you know, you need to do that to see culture changing. Mm-hmm. But there is a very, very strong trend now to present female comedians who are basically verbal pornographers.
Yeah.
The material that they discuss are and use for their comedy are all intimate and inappropriate sexual acts that they engage in, and then describe them and describe the punchline, the funny thing. But this is, you can see that they're extending pornography. It was just this visual representation of sex, but now it's moving out.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. The comedians are now engaging it. There's one I think her name is Nikki Glaser, and I caught her description, and she just said, you know, I'm a pornographer. I just use jokes, but this is my area of comedy.
Well, it's just crude. I mean, it wasn't even Lenny Bruce, who's known for being crude, could be very funny. If one of the lines he said was, he was Jewish, of course, and he says, yes, we killed Christ, but it only lasted for 3 days.
it's weird.
You know, so that's funny, right? It's funny. Where as opposed to Sarah Silverman, who says, yeah, we killed Christ, and I do it, and we do it again. That's not funny. It's just vulgar and mean and provocative hatred, in a way.
The hatred just comes, it just oozes out of her.
Yeah.
She can't really control it, and she doesn't feel a need to. You know, she's in the ascendancy. There's been supersession. You know, the Christian culture has been destroyed. And so she can just basically badmouth them any way they want. I mean, her comedy is really just the N-word applied to Christians. That's really, you know,
one thing that got me about this Bill Light ad is, of course, you have the contradictions of feminism, where women are strong and independent, but yet they're victims, and their men just enslaved them, and it was just involuntary. Like, they put us in bikinis, as if these women didn't voluntarily put themselves in bikinis, exploiting their natural beauty to manipulate men and to gain resources. It's one of these things where it's just the nature of things. Now, I'm not a big fan of bikini ads everywhere either. Sex-drenched culture with advertising. Who did that? The advertising industry. And check out who's behind that. It might be, you know, her fellow ethnics who took over advertising and sexualized it.
They put us in bikinis. I would like to see the actual citation for the individuals who created the bikini as advertising phenomenon.
Because and you have this weird thing where... Okay. Now, listen, if you want to get back to more Victorian standards, I'm all for that, you know, more modesty, but they're not for that. They're attacking normal heterosexual, you know, obviously these ads are exploiting something that's normal, which is heterosexuality, male eagerness, and the fact that men find female bodies very attractive, at least ones that are healthy and young. And so they're going to manipulate that to sell a beer. I never bought a beer because one was in a bikini, but I guess it works, whatever. It works. Now, I remember a day, you probably remember back in the 70s, maybe in the early 80s, where these beer ads were usually more about male bonding. You know, it's Miller time. I'll make it a lowenbrow. These ads were about men getting together at job, you know, getting off an oil rig, cutting down trees or lumberjacks. They were construction. They're getting off the the crane at the port, and that's Miller time. And they all come down there, and it's all support. It's all getting you to want the beer because they're male bonding. Of course, in the 80s, it becomes highly sexualized with bikinis, where everything becomes sexualized, where even Dorito chips are sold with women in bikinis, right? So I understand that, but it's like, at the same time, they're pushing, they're condemning bikinis. they're promoting the dignity of women, female sex workers, transgenderism, homosexuality, all types of perversion and gender behavior, even promoting it with kids. So which is it? I mean, at the same time, women, they're very...
Tim, really good point. Such a good point. I mean, it wasn't kind of white European males that created the bikini advertising. It was Madison Avenue Jews in general.
Yes.
That did this. I mean, sure, there was probably some Europeans involved with that. But when you think of the transition to the pornographic culture, what percentage of that was Jewish, for God's sake? You know, I mean, it was such a large, undemocratic percentage. I mean, I've seen, you know, statistics on this. I don't know. I don't have a citation. 85% or something of the people who are actually developing early pornography, were Jews. And so when she talks about they put us in a bikini, I mean, this is sort of like, a sophomore sociology student accusing the Europeans as being, slavers. And thank God I'm Jewish because we had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a preposterous and ahistorical understanding, which, you know, works in the current environment, maybe for another, 0.01% of propaganda leverage, but it's just totally false. I mean, it is not even remotely defensible. The idea that this was a general movement of European males to demand that, the beer ads contain bikini clad women. That is just absurd. And when you talk about the 70s, beer ads, there weren't any bikini clad women in them. And I guarantee you, Tim, people drank a lot of beer in that era.
No.
It's so, not like we needed to go, we're not drinking enough beer. Let's insert a bikini female into it. And then we'll start, the companies will take off. Believe me. So this is just, it's kind of almost like double bind, where, oh my God, we created this terrible thing of a bikini, women trying to sell beer. This is, our guilt is upon us. And not only that, but, we are kind of insane and morally degenerate because we like to look at these bikini clad women. And we will drink beer if they tell us to drink beer. You know what I mean? The whole thing is just an absolute lump of propaganda.
And they have this weird thing where they're going to burn old ads featuring bikini clad women to provide the material for fertilizer for hops that they'll donate to women brewers or something. Was
Okay. I'm all for that. Let's put all of pornography into the furnace, and then we'll have all kinds of beer.
But pornography is good. It's liberating, though. My point: if pornography is liberating, if sexual liberation is liberation, then bikinis are liberation, aren't they? I don't understand.
I mean, Freud and Marcuse are telling us that this is the only way we can recover from our neurotic European background. The authoritarian personality is talking about how
if we're not overly hypersexualized, I become a fascist.
We have to have Eros because otherwise we'd be fascists and do another Holocaust. And now she comes forward and say, well, we got to get rid of all the bikini clad stuff and burn them. I mean, make up your mind. What do you want us to do here? You know, it's like, it's double bind. It's just, they're just messing with our minds. This is,
The same time that they have books for kids in elementary and middle school teaching them how to perform oral sex on each other.
So, sure. And providing them with, hormone therapy. So this is, I think that there will be an enormous reaction against Miller Lite as there was with Bud Light. You just can't do this kind of normative culture to the extreme that these ads are.
Well, apparently the lady head of marketing is some like liberal broad anyway, so it's the same thing with that Hirschhorn, whatever her name was, Bud Light.
Yeah.
So these companies are just hiring because again they're not interested in marketing, meeting demand and stimulating demand, they're interested in, again, social engineering. And
yeah, remember, BLM has $80 billion of donation from these corporations, right? I mean, that is the, you know, certified amount of corporate donations into the BLM coffers. This is insane, right? This is just insane. But the corporations did it not because, you know, for any other purpose, because they want to use BLM as a spearhead to destroy heritage American culture. This is obviously what the intent is. And when you see ads like this, this is just part of that whole process. There's really no other explanation for it because, you know, as we point out, there's no real historical basis for any of these claims. They certainly can't sell any beer with this woman. I mean, I wouldn't have a beer. If she was in a bar, I'd leave, you know. I mean, I wouldn't want to be around such an individual. Mm-hmm.
So it is unattractive, hectoring.
Well, mean spirit. It's like a buzzkill is what I would call it, you know. So why mess around with someone like that? So, you know, they're not trying to sell anything. They're just trying to control our minds. And, you know, that now they're into, I mean, notice it's light beer. I guess that's the most popular.
Yeah, it's the light stuff. I never bothered with that.
And let's see how the proletariat responds. I mean, I thought the reaction to the Bud Light transvestite was actually pretty healthy. Let's see if, I mean, now this one didn't get a lot of publicity.
No, it didn't when it ran.
It was discovered somehow. It was kind of a very, you know, weak sort of marketing campaign. But now it's been discovered and we'll see what happens. I would be wonderful if there was just a complete ending of drinking these light beers, which in fact are absolutely, you know, toxic tonic. I mean, they're just loaded with pesticides and glyphosate. Yeah,
there's always that too, yes.
Right. I mean, the last thing in the world you want to ever put in your body is this stuff. And they taste like crap, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, why would you waste money on something like this? We should, when we're collecting all our bikinis, we should collect all of the cases of this stuff and throw that into the bonfire. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so it was, you know, it's another marketing, it's another propaganda technique disguised as a marketing campaign.
Well, also this week we had John Durham. He's been at it for like 5 years, a special counsel to investigate the whole Russiagate thing. He released his report and he concluded that they had no verified intelligence when it opened the probe on Donald Trump. FBI has long defended its conduct in the probe, but Durham said his probe provided a sobering look at misconduct. After a three-year probe into the alleged Russian collusion in former President Donald Trump's 2016 campaign, Special Counsel John Durham released his final report on Monday, condemning the FBI's investigation. Durham concluded the FBI had used raw, unanalyzed, uncorroborated intelligence to launch the investigation and failed to follow their own standards. Durham did not recommend any new criminal charges, though. So basically nothing's going to get done. So the prosecutor, however, recommended no criminal charges. Neither the U.S. law enforcement or the intelligence community appears to have possessed any actual evidence of collusion in their holdings at the commencement of the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. Durham wrote in the 200-plus page report sent to Congress and others and obtained. So basically, it was absolutely nothing. It wasn't an investigation. It was a fabrication, but we're not going to get any prosecutions out of this. Of course, this hamstrung the Trump administration, all the Russia stuff. And then I think he was impeached because of it.
Yeah.
You know, so but no one's going to be held accountable for it, right?
You know, it's a genre. I mean, just think about all of these scandals that never go anywhere and, mm-hmm. and are just kind of fodder for this sort of, you know, kind of National Enquirer approach to our political system. I mean, remember Anthony Weiner's laptop?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Joe Biden's laptop. The Epstein, you know, the list of his, you know, his clients. Nothing ever gets done, and no one ever goes to jail. You know, reading the report, I didn't read all of it, but I read excerpts from it. It's clearly criminal what was done to Trump. I mean, there's no question the collusion between the political class and the FBI. I mean, this is really, you know, fascism on a you know unimaginable scale. You know, it's horrible, but nothing will get done. The language in the thing is very carefully crafted, where it's done in, you know, they use inappropriate and seemingly, you know, he never comes out and says, you know, this is criminal activity on the part of the FBI. Mm-hmm. You have to infer that.
Misconduct. Not strictly held to the law. What does that mean?
Exactly. Yeah. You got it. Yeah. So that's the thing. And that's what, you know, that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to create emotion. It will make people support Trump, love Trump,
yep.
And not to worry
it's
about
done that. Yeah.
You know, warp speed and the vaccine and his role in that. You know, they'll just see him as their political person who was damaged by the other side, and all I can say is this stuff just keeps people from thinking clearly. We should ignore.
Well, when you have a conspiracy where it's everyone's involved in it, no one's going to be held accountable.
Right.
It's kind of like, I think Jonathan Turley said something, that the law professor Jonathan Turley said something to that effect. And what this does do is also, is what it does is it obscures or covers up, of course, a potentially bigger scandal. Of course, that was the commissioning of the Steele memorandum. He was a British intelligence officer who provided fake information to the FBI, which they knew, and they obtained a false FISA warrant. This is done during the Obama administration. Just remember, this is during the 2016 campaign. So, and Obama was in on this, the Obama administration, and Hillary Clinton, who was then, yeah, Secretary of State, was then on it. Yeah. Of course, this covers up her own scandal with her own. Remember the server in her bathroom or something, where she was running a influence peddling operation with Bill Clinton, and that was scrubbed and that wasn't investigated. So, and this, but it doesn't just how corrupt the FBI is.
It's just a Praetorian Guard disguised as an intelligence agency. The Epstein, list is, you know, an example of, you can just bring any kind of scandal to the public. You can.
Oh, by the way, Joe,
yeah.
This month is Jewish American History Month, American Heritage, Jewish American Heritage Month. So we have to thank the Jews for Jeffrey Epstein.
Another moment of gratitude from.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is the thing, is that there isn't going to be any prosecution. Nothing will happen. And it's just, it'll just disappear even as a news story. But it is pretty straightforward if you read it, that there just isn't any doubt that there was collusion between the FBI and the political class to denigrate Trump. That was the
goal. But how do you openly admit this was a false, it wasn't an investigation, it was a fabrication.
Yeah, it was a fabrication. Yeah.
Where law wasn't strictly followed, procedure wasn't followed. Yeah. Well, wait a second. To swear out a false claim for a warrant is a crime. That's why you have to swear it out. And then otherwise, perjury. It's like that. Was that the only person went to jail? Was that attorney Kleinsmith? I think, and he kept to keep. He got to keep his. He was convicted. I don't think he spent a day in jail. He admitted faking evidence, and he kept his law license.
He didn't even get kicked out of the bar.
Yes, and but so Kleinsmith. Again, this month is Jewish American, right. And we have to thank the Jews for Kleinsmith.
Yeah, so let's thank them. So, anyway, there's no accountability. There's only salacious, revelation to the public to distract them from real issues, and then over time, people just forget. Right? They just time and time again, they bring these things up. It looks like, oh my God, the laptop will surely give us the evidence that we can topple the regime. And then it just fades away and nothing is ever done. So I just call it a genre. You know, it's just a genre of distraction and keeping people from being able to think clearly because they're so caught up in these salacious details and things. It was, as the genre goes, it was pretty horrendous. I mean, you know, looking at what was done, it was nasty and illegal, but nothing will happen about it. Nothing. So, just
but
move
hold, on. The whole entire media, and there's no, I mean, there was a was that the Babylon Bee that said, had a headline that said, media admits they lied about Russiagate, but trust us on everything else, or something to that effect.
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, exactly. So so we are in a position where the political class is a secret society that is organized against us. They're using propaganda right and left, and they also control most of the media. So this is our world.
And here's the Babylon Bee thing. It says, media admits they lied about that Russian collusion thing, but are totally telling the truth about everything else. And I'll read it. It says, U.S. after John Durham's newly released report confirmed the Trump-Russia collusion narrative was entirely fabricated, several notable media figures admitted they lied to the American people for 3 years, but promised that they're totally telling the truth about everything else. I would never lie to the American people except for that one time. That doesn't count, said CBS News anchor Scott Pelley. Just look at how serious and trustworthy my face is. Look at my sincere gaze as I stare soulfully into the camera and deliver my prepared lines with gravitas of a real truth teller. Come on. You can still trust us, agreed CNN anchor and part-time anonymous message board foot model Jake Tapper. Even though we divided the country in hatred and anger for 3 years to try to destroy Trump over a false narrative, and then continued to do so even after we found out it was fake, then insulted the intelligence of everyone who was skeptical about what we were saying, doesn't mean we would ever lie to you or anything. Media-approved anonymous sources claim that 10 out of 10 media experts agree that in spite of the lies about Donald Trump and Russia, Americans should still unquestionably believe every claim the media makes about Ukraine, COVID, domestic terrorism, the 2020 election, and who is racist and who isn't. At Publishing Time, Joy Reid also chimed in, saying everyone who doesn't agree with her is racist. So there you go.
Yeah. So that's a great article, because, see, this is the spirit of the rebellion. This is the power of the independent media. You know, that kind of response couldn't have been given in, you know, 25 years ago. But now that kind of humor is understood. There's enough people who absolutely get that humor and are that level of skeptical against the media. You know, they recognize it's just a tool of the oligarchs, and it's organized against us. We have to make sure, as I've mentioned many times, my opinion concerning that, it isn't enough to just be aware. You have to keep thinking, keep analyzing, and keep moving toward an understanding of the identity and the motivation of the political class. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's where you have to get to you know, have the understanding of the world that you need in order to make clear decisions. You know?
Well, I mean, it's relevant that because he's submitting this report to Congress, and of course, right now in the House of Representatives, you have the Committee on Weaponization of Government that's being held, and they've had witnesses. They had that FBI agent O'Boyle, who was a whistleblower regarding Merrick Garland's attempt to harass parents. Now, this is during they were trying to manipulate the Virginia gubernatorial campaign, but to harass parents who were speaking of school board meetings, and he was retaliated against. His career was ruined. They tried to ruin him. But this report should factor into their investigation, weaponization. Obviously, this is an example of weaponization of government going back years. They should, this should factor, Jim Jordan's heading up the committee on this at the House. She's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. They're looking into this, and they should investigate the what's going on with January 6th. And there are people in prison, 1,000 people. And they say even 1,000 more could be thrown into jail for what happened on January 6th, or what allegedly happened. They're calling it an insurrection. That whole thing, that was an FBI, operation. They should look into that. And the fact
one leads to the other. Yeah. Good point. If nothing else, the Durham report should open up an analysis of the FBI's role in 1/6.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's the exact same thing. They're basically anti-Trump. They're, and of course their fingerprints are all over the thing. So this would be a great kind of lever to get, people to do something politically to open that up a little bit, to make some, get some public hearing and testimony going on, because those poor devils are rotting away. And the vast majority of them, of course, did nothing that merits any of this. You know?
Yeah. And you've had that recent sedition trial with the Proud Boys, which was absurd. Of course, Matthew Graves is presiding over Washington, D.C. He's the U.S. attorney there. They're having a huge crime wave there, explosion and carjackings and robberies and assaults and murders. And he's turning down, I think his declination rate for convictions is over 67% for street crimes, but he's devoting a huge amount of resources, millions of dollars, to this January 6th, crusade. Because for political reasons, they want to build a case. And and what gets me is you've had this revelation with Durham report and the these hearings, real crimes being committed, abuse of power that's being exposed by the Jordan's committee, and you hear nothing in the media about it. But remember last year during the January 6th committee hearings, they had prime time. And they interrupted the regular programming to cover it. The only station didn't do it was Fox News. That whole thing was just a charade.
I think they should charge the 1-6 insurrectionists with drinking Miller Lite beer because they were befuddled by their bikini. The whole thing is just one stupid lump of propaganda, and it's just sad that the people who went into the Capitol, who were let in, were basically deluded into thinking that the political struggle that they thought they were participating in was real. I mean, the great clarity moment, and I think you probably have seen the video where you have the two thugs who are obviously agent provocateurs smashing the window. They have a device, that mm-hmm. they're using to smash a window. And they have a video of them shot from the inside. It's a staged event showing the thugs coming through, smashing the window. They are looking like insurrectionists. But there's other videos taken from the reverse side, which shows that directly adjacent, and I mean 2 feet away, the police are opening the door and then like waving their arms so people can just walk in. Right. So the whole thing is a staged event, the people who are in jail are the victims, of this. And in fact, I forget which trial it was. There's so many of them. But in one of them, the FBI made the statement that they couldn't release the video. The defense attorney had asked to have the video released. And they said, no, we can't release it because it could expose the identity of undercover FBI agents. I mean, they actually gave that as a rationale mm-hmm. with a straight face, So I said, like, well, how many were there? I mean, what percentage of the crowd was in fact, agents working for it? Anyway, so, let's hope people can learn from 1-6 so that the next time you have a moment like this, we can make better decisions, about how to rebel. The rebellion, at this point, you just have to assume, particularly at the federal government level, that you're dealing with a fake dialectic, that the Republicans and the Democrats, you may be caught up in the struggle, but neither party is going to help you. You are the victim. You are the goal. What is being attacked by both parties. So you really shouldn't be in that struggle. You need to approach it obliquely in a different way. I mean, we talked about that leading up to the 1-6 protest, how likely it was that this was going to be basically manipulated and come out on the negative for all of these people who are doing the protest.
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene has introduced an impeachment bill against FBI Director Wray for targeting pro-lifers. Under Wray's watch, the FBI has intimidated, harassed, and entrapped American citizens and have deemed enemies of the Biden regime. As such, Director Wray has turned the FBI into Joe Biden, America Ireland's personal police force, the resolution read. First, the Soviet-style tactics used by the FBI against normal Americans are unprecedented in this country. FBI whistleblower Garrett O'Boyle told congressional investigators the FBI created a terrorist threat tag following the Dobbs Supreme Court decision in 2022. O'Boyle confirmed that the purpose of the tag was to target pro-life individuals on September 23rd, 2022. Armed federal agents and tactical gear raided the family home of Mark Hawk, and a pro-life Catholic and father of seven children because he obstructed, well, allegedly obstructed access to abortion clinic resolution states. Huck later beat the charge. He was acquitted, I think, after, I think, 1 hour, the jury acquitted him. Yep. Ray has become a lackey for the Biden regime, prosecuting the enemies of and handlers, including the both public and private citizens of resolution states. Now, obviously, the impeachment wouldn't pass in the Senate, but it would be a good message to send in the House, where the Republicans do control the majority, to at least let it some publicity, the level of abuse here, of power that's been going on at the FBI.
I think that going forward, they should impeach all the presidents. First thing, they should get it out of the way.
Once they're sworn in,
right. As soon as they're sworn in, they should impeach them because it's just a complete distraction. They can never really remove them from office, unless they have a big majority in the Senate that they can work with. So it's an exercise in publicity. I certainly think Biden should be impeached. I mean, obviously he's violating his oath of office with the situation at the border.
Well, there's that, and then there's also his criminal enterprise.
Well, there's also that. You're right. Yeah,
the Biden crime family. It's a criminal syndicate. Yeah.
it's the run of the mill crime. Yeah, but there's when you look at the Roosevelt Hotel raiders,
mm-hmm.
and the illegally coming across the border.
Have you heard about the DHS coordinating with Mexican immigration to have like a phased releases or entry into the country? They were coordinating the entry so they can be processed. That was some organization claims that the DHS actually coordinated with Mexican immigration officials to violate U.S. law to bring these people into the country so they can be processed more efficiently. There was Ann Coulter, and the problem here is, like Ann Coulter said, is it's not a question of handling the immigrants more efficiently or humanely. So the thing is, the presumption is these people do not have a right to enter the country. She said the United States is not a battered wife's shelter. It's a country it's a sovereign country with borders. You do not have a right to come here, despite what your problems are around the world. That's not the function of the United States to serve as a shelter for people who allegedly being mistreated or seeking political asylum. We talked last week how that claim is being abused anyway. Basically, they want to come here for a better life. That's not a legitimate reason to come here. You don't have a right to enter. There are laws in the books that supposedly regulate this, and they're not enforcing it, openly flouting the law.
Yeah, and just remember that their claim that they are, misguided and deluded altruists who just care so much about the poor and the persecuted in these third world countries, mm-hmm. that they're willing to, play fast and loose with the border laws of the nation. This is just total nonsense. They are not bringing them here to give them a better life. They are bringing them here to give us a worse life. The Roosevelt Hotel Raiders are mm-hmm. not find a lot of peace here in the United States. They may plug into the welfare system for a while, but there's just nothing that their educational skills can plug into in Manhattan. There's just nothing. They don't.
Well, circumstances change. Emma Lazarus' poem is not an amendment to the Constitution. It's just a poem. That's all it is. It was put later on at the foot of the Statue of Liberty. It's not an amendment to the Constitution. In fact, if anything, after that poem was put there, or she wrote that poem, they shut immigration down for 40 years. And the country grew very well. That's because the country at one point allowed immigrants to come into the country. For better or for worse, doesn't mean it always has to, because circumstances change. 1880 was different than 1925.
They're vetted for qualification.
Yeah,
they're vetted for qualification. You have to have qualifications, there has to be an economic need that's also going to be fulfilled.
Or it provides some economic benefit to the host country. Right.
You have to have these things in sync in order for the immigration to make any sense whatsoever. None of that. Zero is taking place with the third world, wave that's being, brought. The people in the Roosevelt Hotel, what percentage of them can even speak English? Mm-hmm. What percent of them have math skills? What percent of them are felonies, convictions? No one knows. No, we don't know. It's just who knows. And then what is the economic need in New York City? New York City doesn't have thousands of jobs that they need to be filled. I mean, they are overwhelmed with street crime right now. This is what the mayor, the woke mayor, is complaining about right and left. And they're going to insert 1,000 Roosevelt Raiders into this. Mm-hmm. What are they going to? Are they going to be like computer programmers working, for Microsoft or something? They're going to be engaging in street crime. That's all that they can really do. So this is the goal. This is what it's, I am quite upset about the American public not getting a little bit more of a spine and yelling a bit about this, because this, they're intimidated because they don't want to be called racist. But man, this is really, the fast track to oblivion for this country.
Well, the Nation of Immigrants. Well, no, it wasn't. First of all, they were pioneers. They didn't come here and access welfare programs that the American Indians had. they didn't. They built the country. They didn't. So it's different than you're a pioneer than you're an immigrant. It's a completely different situation. So that's disingenuous to begin with. It's always a question. Not every group, even if you do immigrants, are going to be as compatible as other groups. And they purposely, after 1965, brought in groups that are incompatible with Heritage America, because they wanted to destroy Heritage America.
Yeah, Ellis Island, with the Italians and German immigrants, they could plug in within a generation into the same economic skills. And there was stuff for them to do because you were having a growing economy. The industrialization was occurring.
Yes.
It made a lot of sense. This, to apply the philosophy of like, well, in that era, immigration was good and wholesome. Therefore, if you don't like it now, you're racist. Well, wait a second. There are qualifications, there are standards, there's economic, structures that have to ever get plugged into. The real description of what's going on was Biden's, when he's just, kind of that senile rant he went on where he's talking about wave after wave,
yes.
Coming and coming. Well, that's true, but to what effect? How do you know this isn't going to end badly?
No, he says it's a good thing that white people will be a minority.
And the fact that he would say that is obviously propaganda.
And I point out, if you watch that video, to his left is Alejandro Mayorkas, our current immigration czar, head of Department of Homeland Security. When Biden's talking about wave and wave, unrelenting stream. And there's Alejandro Mayorkas.
Yeah. And I wonder, they're so worried about Russia. Do you think there's any chance? I mean, you could get like a Russian or how about Chinese? Maybe get a Chinese spy or two through that net. I mean, there's just, there is no way they can stop them because they changed the law so that if they apply for asylum, that's all they have to do. They are not granted asylum, but neither are they returned. They are simply inserted into the country. And
they have court dates that go as far as 2037 or something.
But even if they show up.
14
years. And what are you going to do if they don't show up?
They're going to show up in 14 years. They're going to have kids.
Even if it was like in 14 days, they wouldn't show up.
No, they wouldn't. No, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So anyway, it isn't just the destruction of the country, but it is ridiculously obvious that it is. So there's no way political club letting this phenomenon occur other than that they just want to destroy Heritage America. Yeah. So Tim,
clear.
I wanted to it's very clear. I wanted to to digress for a second. I just wanted to comment my sadness over the fall of Bakhmut. Not the fact that the Russians, the Wagner group, claimed that they had won the battle and driven the Ukrainians completely out of the city. I mean, this was a foregone conclusion. But the crazy head of Wagner, Yevgeny Prigozhin, think I'm pronouncing it correctly, he gave some statistics which I knew were real, but were still horrifying. He said that, Russia keeps track of how many they kill, and he said that in this battle, they killed 57,000 European males, and they wounded, had casualties of another 85,000. So this is really World War I genocide volume. And all of it
is this during the entire siege or battle?
This Prigozhin was saying that these numbers related just to Bakhmut in during the siege, from the point Wagner came in, which was about 10 months ago. It's been a long battle, but nevertheless, this is just this one part of the war. And to look at these numbers, it's just horrifying, because the number that Colonel McGregor, who I think is clear-minded, is giving is something under 300,000 total KIA for the Ukrainians, and maybe 500,000 casualties. Just absolutely horrendous, unsustainable by any magical calculation in terms of, you know, can this country survive? No, Ukraine is being eliminated as an actual nation, and I think even as an ethnicity. But I just, you know, I wanted to comment that, you know, the independent media was very quick to catch on to, you know, the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, as being potentially genocidal, but they really have not done a good job with, you know, the war as a, you know, false dialectic just for the purpose of population reduction. I've been very disappointed, because this is obviously what's going on here. Zelensky's rationale for inserting all of these people into Bakhmut and trying to hold on to it, even though it was obvious that they were going to be all destroyed, makes no more sense than Biden's rationale for the third world, refuge seekers to be permitted to come in on the millions into the United States. It's just, there isn't any rationale that you can present that is coherent. And so the public should be, you know, on the lookout for other purposes. And when you look at these numbers, genocide has to come to mind, in my opinion. I think in Ukraine, there's going to be, you know, they talk about, well, how will this ever be brought to an end? Well, I don't know. I mean, we talked over a year ago about how there wasn't really any way it would end, because
Someone float an idea of a 38th parallel?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I mean. They could do that overnight. I mean, what they need to do is just accept, you know, the regions that Russia has annexed as. They could give a fancy name. There's a fancy legal name for kind of a transition zone, but basically it would just mean that they wouldn't be any Ukrainian political influence in this area, and Russia would monitor it, which would, I'm sure, make the Russian happy. But then they would, the hard thing is would be demanded by the Russians, is that you could not militarize the remainder of the Ukraine. You would have to, like, NATO could no more of this, you know, 500,000 army stuff. They'd have to just use that area as a demilitarized zone, so that it would create a kind of buffer against, you know, rockets and whatnot, hitting Russia. I mean, I think this if that would be agreed to by, you know, Zelensky and the West, then I think Russia would accept it. But I just don't see this happening. I honestly think that they're going to actually, the Ukraine is going to launch some kind of an offensive, which will lead to another catastrophic reduction in their army. And after which they will appeal to volunteers from other nations. I mean, Tim, they could just depopulate Europe of all of the breeding age males here. You know, I mean, they could literally just say, well, you know, we just have to, it's a coalition of the willing.
Well, from what I understand, the war is not very popular among the people of Europe, the government.
Thank God for that. But yeah. I mean, you can see, but the governments, it's very popular.
Even
with
in Poland, the people are.
The government has power of conversion. That's what makes me nervous, is that, you know, the question is just, when will the population just, you know, may have that crystal clear moment of, like, these governments are in collusion. You know, before we started recording, I mentioned that what this really feels like to me is one. And, you know, recall, you know, Edith Cullen, the heroic British nurse who found out that they were, the Belgium Relief Commission was actually giving food to Germany to keep them in the war so that more people could be slaughtered. Mm-hmm. Recall that. You know, well, this is kind of what we're experiencing here, is that they're just coming up with excuse after excuse, you know, to keep the war going, because it's reducing their favorite population to reduce. And when you think about what this will do, you know, to the future of Ukraine, I mean, it's, you know, that country, they've literally destroyed it.
Well, maybe they'll rename it like Khazaria or something, and BlackRock.
Khazaria and BlackRock will have a huge, you know, center there, to, you know, monitor the oil rights and mineral rights and things like that. Yeah.
I guess that they got to win the war, though, don't they?
They have to keep Russia out. I mean, you know, we discussed it. Like they, like Germany and Poland have given everything that they have. They have less than a week's worth of munition, and this was the admission by their own military, mm-hmm. In the event that they got into an actual fighting war. And of course, this just flatly contradicts the logic of the war, which was, well, we're worried about Russian invading, so we need to weaken it. Well, wait a second, worried about invading it, how come you only have 2 days worth of munitions left?
Yeah.
I mean, that isn't going to cause much trouble for the Russians, is it? I mean, you've seen that their technology seems to work pretty well, doesn't it? They sure have slaughtered a lot of Ukrainians. And it is, and just to digress again, I mean, their technology has just been better than NATO's. You know, they talk about giving them F-16s. I mean, this is ludicrous. The look down, shoot down technology the Russians had would blow up every F-16 in the sky. It'd be just like the Ukrainian Air Force at the beginning of the war. They'd just get slaughtered. There's just no hope for them. You know, anyway, it's, you know.
Yeah, you have a $100,000 missile shooting down a $20 million aircraft. So exactly.
And the missile cannot be defeated, typically, you know. Yeah. And if, you know, so, you know, so this is I hope the public, you know, both the United States and Europe will really put pressure on the politicians to just end this war immediately, because obviously, you know, they're not going to defeat Russia. This is ludicrous even to think of that. And all they're going to do is end up with just more of the precious breeding age Europeans being lost forever, you know, in this stupid war. So.
Yep. Ethnic cleansing. So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, thank you so much, brother. We'll talk next week.
Enjoy the rest of the week. Bye-bye.